Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel, talking a little draft 2012 on today's podcast. So, Aaron, the upshot of you moving to Southern California was that you live on the beach. The downside of it was that that you had to do Southern California draft coverage. So we had to move you out of your cozy Northeast comfort zone with your friendly scowl to cover 20 states, and they're all cold and players that don't pop up till May. Oh, no, right. None of that for you anymore. We sent you to the exact opposite end of the country in terms of draft coverage. So let's actually start with that. How different has it been for you covering SoCal, and how different is the SoCal draft coverage versus the Northeast? I hadn't even thought about that question until I was talking about it, but they seem like they're pretty different, not just geographically, but just in terms of covering the draft. You seem like you get a completely different kind of player.
Oh, absolutely. It is really a completely different animal. I mean, rather than, when you're doing the Northeast, you're always kind of trying to make sure you're not missing some, 15th round guy in New Hampshire that, might get drafted okay. I mean, it's if you're a 15th round guy in Southern California, you're very much an afterthought. And, out here, it's I think I've got 30 guys this year in the top 200, which would, I don't know if you'll have 30 guys drafted in the top 15 rounds in the Northeast. it's just a different deal. You've got a lot of high upside guys and it's just so much more depth. I mean, I feel like each one of these counties is like a big state in the Northeast, not even bigger, really. There's no comparable. It's fun. I mean, it's fun because you get to see these guys year round. You can see them in the fall. You can see them, in February, and they're out there, performing in these great events that they have, seems like all along the calendar. So, it's good to be able to get a look at some of these guys in person, but, it's also daunting to try to make sure you're not missing some pop-up guy and that happens out here too. You have guys that pop up late that, kind of come on strong, a little bit under the radar, and there's just so many players out there that it sometimes feels like you're missing somebody.
That was actually what I was going to ask you. Like, it feels like the Northeast is the king of the pop-up, whereas it would seem like it would be harder in Southern California, but you're saying that people in Southern California, there are still pop-up jokers. Who's, for example, the pop-up joker this year?
Well, I think, I think David Hill is a right-hander from El Medina High School who's popped up a little bit here in the last couple of weeks. A guy who's got a chance to have average stuff across the board. He's been up to 93 miles an hour, got some feel for the changeup and the breaking ball, and he could be a top five rounds guy, a guy that wasn't really on the radar heading into the spring. I think this football player Aaron Porter has some people intrigued. He's really an elite linebacker recruit for UCLA, and he's going to go play football, and nobody really thinks he's signable, but some people like this guy. He's kind of got that Toby Gerhardt build, that physicality, athleticism. He's had a good spring in baseball, so his stock has kind of risen a little bit, and now there's some sentiment that maybe somebody could try to make a run at him, but he's going to be a very difficult sign. I don't really see it happening, he is a name that has been circulating here the last couple of weeks as somebody to keep an eye on. It's kind of a wild card for this draft.
He does sound interesting. UCLA football recruit, Toby Gerhardt, almost wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing from a baseball standpoint. Something he was always kind of like untapped potential from the baseball standpoint. Go ahead.
And the problem is, too, with a football guy, especially as a linebacker, I mean, this isn't like a cornerback or a wide receiver. I mean, he's going to go to UCLA, and they're going to try to, get him to add muscle and, bulk up. And, you don't need to bulk up as much in baseball. I mean, you want to have more of a quick twitch athlete out there in the outfield than you do as a linebacker. So, I mean, you could see him going to school at UCLA and just kind of focusing on football and baseball becoming an afterthought. But right now the intention is to play both sports at UCLA. We'll see how that transpires.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that you talked about UCLA being a more physical offensive club this year. And, well, that would happen if they had a linebacker hitting in the middle of their lineup in the future, you said, there's some limited cross-training that goes on between those two sports. It's John and Aaron talking a little draft as opposed to college baseball. We're going to talk about the college class in general down the line. But, Aaron, let's talk about Southern California specifically. Like we said, that's your area that you're handling for us. And obviously, all the we were lucky here in North Carolina. We got to see three of the top teams in Southern California on the high school side: Orange Lutheran, Mater Dei, and of course Harvard Westlake here in town for the National High School Invitational back in the March. And of course, the big story at that time was Harvard Westlake with Lucas Giolito hurt, and Max Fried did play. Max Fried remains the top high school player in Southern California for this year's draft perspective. You talked about him and Giolito, and we had our top 200 meeting, like how to rank those guys. Even with Giolito not pitching since March, it was a real struggle to know whom to rank over whom, and it still is a struggle, isn't it? I mean, it still seems like Max Fried kind of up and down a lot the last month.
Yeah, you're right, and this is a guy that I think had pitched himself past Giolito several weeks ago. I mean, at that point, you know, people were talking about him as a potential top, you know, three pick. I mean, he was a candidate some people thought for maybe number one, but you know, he's a projectable lean left-hander who already can touch 95 miles an hour. He's got one of the best breaking balls in this draft. He's got a, you know, a changeup that projects as above average. I mean, you know, come on, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's as a guy who's done it. He's got a track record, a long track record of success. He's got field of pitch. I mean, you know, there's nothing really to you can nitpick here and there, but I mean, there's no real red flags with this guy. And so, you know, with Giolito, there was that question mark. I mean, this guy hasn't pitched all spring of his senior year. You know, as good as his track record is, as explosive as his stuff is, his upside, I think, is unmatched in this draft. There is that question mark hanging over him. So, you know, we would have had, I think, Fried a little higher. And then Fried kind of stumbled a little bit. I think maybe it was just fatigue. I mean, he's been pitching for, you know, it seems like 8 months straight here. I mean, it just hasn't had a lot of downtime. And his stuff dropped off a little bit down the stretch. And then, you know, he kind of came back. It sounds like last night he had his, you know, really strong outing. You know, one of his best outings of the year as far as his stuff. So I just think that there's no reason to overreact, you know, to Fried being a little tired down the stretch. I mean, this guy is he's established. You know, he really is a blue chip guy. And again, he has track record. And, you know, you can take your pick with these two guys. I mean, I think Freed's the safer pick. But, you know, if Giolito proves to people that there's no long-term health concerns, then I think he's a pretty safe pick because, you know, I mean, a guy, a right-hander with his body and his makeup, you know, a guy can run it up to 99, 100 miles an hour and got a filthy power curveball and, you know, he's got a changeup that could be plus as well. I mean, again, it's really good stuff. And I think he can command it too. So, you know, they're both really elite guys.
Yeah, they sound like they really, you know, early on separated themselves from the rest of the pack in Southern California. And I guess the big issue will be signability for Giolito. I mean, he's a guy, I think he's the biggest mystery man in this draft just because of the injury. You know, if I say that it's a 50% shot that he goes to UCLA, would you go over that or under that?
I think you about nailed it. I mean, you have to feel like somebody, you know, in the top few picks would have to make a run at him. I mean, if he drops in the middle of first round, I can't see him signing because of the new draft rules and the slot. I mean, it's going to take, this guy knows what he's worth. You know, he knows that, you know, if he were healthy, he could make, you know, $4-6 million. I mean, he's not going to sign for two. I don't see it. You know, especially where he comes from a family that has money and, you know, I think they value education. They've seen guys like Garrett Cole go to school and leave 3 years later as number one pick. And I suspect, you know, they feel the same way about his upside. But then again, you know, maybe this health situation create a little bit of uncertainty for them. Maybe they realize, hey, you know, nothing is guaranteed. But my sense is it's going to take – I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to throw out a number on how much it's going to take to sign this guy, but it's going to take a lot. And I think if you know, he gets out of the top 10 picks, I really don't think there's a chance that he signs.
I'm with you. I think it is so difficult to know, but I really think that you're talking about a guy where I know the rules have changed, So if you just look at what just happened with Garrett Cole, he turned down first-round money from the New York Yankees. He didn't turn down any team. He turned down the New York Yankees, goes to Omaha. Goes to UCLA, is there for 3 years, goes to Omaha, nearly wins a national championship, goes to the College Series Finals, and then is still a first overall pick 3 years later. It's hard, I think, for Major League Baseball, for clubs to argue, hey, look, if you don't take our $2 million right now, this is your only chance. Even with the rules changing, I don't see how the Giolitos don't look at that argument and say, are you serious? This just happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's, I think it's a pretty big, pretty good argument that UCLA can make. And then, like you said, Max Fried is pretty special of his own volition. And like you said, left-handed certainly does not hurt. I guess we ended up with him at 11 on our top 100. Like you said, that almost feels a little low, you know.
Yeah.
But I do think the top of the draft. If you ask me, I'll ask you. You saw Michael Wacha at his absolute best. You saw him no-hit Pepperdine. Or did he finish that no-hitter, or he just missed the no-hitter? I forget.
I think he lost it in the eighth or the ninth, but it was he was very good.
Yeah, he had the perfect game going into the seventh or eighth inning, right?
Right.
So you saw Michael Wacha great, and Michael Wacha is pretty good. Breaking balls come along. Fastball and changeup are definite plus pitches, especially the changeup. Might be the best change in the class. Who'd you rather have, Michael Wacha, the fairly polished college right-hander, or Max Fried, the high school lefty?
I hate to question our list that we just put out, but I think I would take Fried.
Right.
The guy that he has more upside. He is left-handed. I just think every piece is in place with Fried. There's a little more risk because it's a high school guy versus a polished college pitcher. I think Wacha will be in the big leagues. I think he's, barring injury, I think he's pretty safe to be an innings eating kind of guy, with some upside. He could be if the breaking ball really comes along. He's got a really good changeup, as you said. It's a 70 pitch probably.
Right.
He's big and physical and durable. If that slider or curveball, and I think probably the slider is the pitch that's come along for him, if that continues to progress, then, you could see him being a number two in the big leagues. But you could see Fried. He could be Clayton Kershaw. That's your ceiling. That's your best case scenario. Obviously, you're talking about a Cy Young kind of guy here, but, that's rare. And for me, I think it's worth of a slight gamble on the upside.
Yeah, I think to me, those guys being four spots apart is really not that big of a difference.
Right.
I think it really does. It's the safe versus the upside argument, and that's I do think the majority of clubs probably do have Wacha ahead, but I think I'm with you. I think I would rather take Freeze, the Baseball America podcast, with John and Aaron. Aaron, the rest of the Southern California class, it does seem like it drops off a decent amount there. Especially, it feels like there's just not. It feels like the strength of the Southern California class is high school players, A, and B, depth after these stars at Harvard, Westlake. That is really notable most for its depth of supplemental to fourth rounders rather than its star power. Is that fair?
I agree. In that respect, it's a little bit similar to last year where you have the two guys at the very top, Cole and Bauer. This year, you've got Giolito and Fried. A lot of UCLA connections here. It just tells you how a little aside. It just tells you how good of a job UCLA does. And when you talk to scouts out here, John, it's the way that they talked about Kevin O'Sullivan. Again, you don't hear a lot of scouts talk in positive terms about college coaches. You just don't. There is a little bit of an adversarial relationship.
You just don't. I wrote that column about it this offseason, and you just don't hear it. Absolutely right.
But they have a lot of respect for Savage, and when they're competing with Savage for a player, they kind of say, oh, I don't know. John usually gets these guys, and then they go to school and they get better, and we'll take him in 3 years. He does an incredible job. He's, people say he's one of the hardest working guys out there, and he evaluates very well. The track record now that he's starting to build, I think it speaks pretty loudly. The fact he had Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole last year. Now you've got Giolito and Fried, and there's a chance that Giolito could go to school. This class is just littered with really talented UCLA recruits. I mean, James Caprillion is maybe a second-round guy, but somebody that people think will be a tough sign. Felipe Perez is another right-hander. We've got him as a fourth-round kind of a talent. He's probably going to go to school. He's a very academic kid, and he's got a lot of upside. I think he's projectable and loose and has really good feel for pitching. Cody Petit is I was talking to somebody today who said he kind of reminds him of, he could be an Ian Kennedy kind of guy. You know, he's not real tall, but he's fairly physical. He's strong, and he's got a really good curveball, and he needs to get better. He hasn't had a very good spring, but he could go to UCLA and work with John Savage and be a lot better in 3 years. So, I kind of went off on a tangent here, but I think
that's okay.
It's worth mentioning, just how it's kind of like what Kevin O'Sullivan has done at Florida. You know, the way scouts talk about Scully, Savage is a little bit like the West Coast version of that. He hasn't maybe had the kind of consistent winning that O'Sullivan has had. I mean, Savage has been to Omaha once, but that program has become a lot more consistent than it used to be. I mean, they're in regionals, they're hosting regionals, they're winning regionals. They didn't used to do that stuff.
There's no doubt the program is. I'm not taking anything away from Gary Adams. Gary Adams is one of the nicest people in college baseball. He was at UCLA and produced. I know for most of Gary Adams' tenure, UCLA and LSU would go back and forth for most big league alumni in the major of college teams. So, I mean, Gary did a great job, but they only went to Omaha once. And John Savage only been to Omaha once, but the team, like you said, is a more consistent winner under Coach Savage than it was under Coach Adams. There's no doubt about it. Aaron, a couple guys that I wanted to touch on with you that I don't believe are UCLA signees. Tanner Rahier, is it pronounced Rahier?
It's more like Ryer.
Ryer. Tanner Ryer. Okay, well, Tanner Ryer, he attends Palm Desert High School. We've written about this guy. He does not play for Palm Desert High School's team. It's definitely a strange deal to have a guy who does not play high school baseball. He's just playing in a club out there, on a club team, basically travel ball during the spring. It sounds like scouts really, some of them are pretty split on that. Most of them seem to not like it, but also seems like people are pretty split on Tanner Ryer. What's your take on, correct me if I'm wrong, we have him as a top high school position player in SoCal. What makes him that, and is he really a split camp guy?
Yeah. He is a split camp guy. I mean, there are some scouts who wouldn't take him before the fourth round, and there's others who would take him at the back of the first round. He does engender a real difference of opinion because, he's a little unconventional. I mean, he's probably not a shortstop, first of all. He's probably going to be either a third baseman or a second baseman. But
okay.
There are people who really like the hands and the actions and think he could be – I've heard people say he could be an above-average second baseman, and I've had people say he could be a gold-glove third baseman. You know, so, I mean, he's got a really strong arm that'll play at either position. The foot speed is – kind of fringy, which limits him at shortstop. He just doesn't really have the range and not quite as fluid as you'd want for a shortstop. But, he's such a high-energy player, John, and it's almost like, he's – one scout told me he's kind of like 3 yards in a cloud of dust, the way he plays the game. Like you hear with people say that about a football player sometimes. I mean, he's just really – he's a little bit of a high-effort player. But he just, he plays like Pete Rose. He's just a bat out of hell. He's all over the place, and he's an extremely aggressive player at the plate as well. I mean, but he has natural feel for the barrel. He hits the ball hard. He's always, full speed out of the box, and there is some power in there. It's not huge power, but he's got a chance to have average power down the road. He's one of those guys that he does endear himself to scouts because of the way he plays the game, his passion and energy. There are some scouts who don't like the fact that him and Cody Petit, who I just mentioned, is in that scout league as well, that eschewed his summer ball team. Some that rubs some scouts the wrong way. But, the fact is, especially with Tanner, I mean, he loves the game of baseball, and I think that kind of wins out.
Pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting story. I mean, I know that – I think we know how Nathan Rohde feels about it. He's very antagonistic, frankly, to a club league and the kids not playing high school baseball. I don't know if Tanner Ryer by himself and Cody Poteet, if those guys are going to change it, but if more players of their caliber start not playing high school baseball. I don't feel like that's going to be a good thing for high school baseball. So I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm antagonistic toward it, but I'm certainly not that excited about top quality players and not playing high school baseball. Doesn't feel like there's any way that competition could be that strong. They're playing like junior college JV teams, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are other teams in the league that are made up of similar players. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a good sense for the competition. I think for some of these kids, it's better than their high school competition would have been, because there are some leagues out here that aren't strong. But I mean, I think the jury's still out at this point. I haven't really formed my opinion completely, but it is fascinating because, you know, this is a kid, Ryer, who's really driven. I mean, he wants to succeed, wants to play pro baseball, and he thinks this is the best thing for his development. So, you know, it's a very calculated decision. It's not something that he made lightly. And it could work out for him. I mean, if he's drafted in the first, 40 picks, hey, you know, I guess it worked out all right.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, I think we're really going to see what happens with this guy. And like with both of them, not just one guy. There's two, at least a couple that are high.
Yeah, there's
profile.
Several others too that are noteworthy. Those are kind of the two biggest name guys I think in this league.
Speaking of low caliber competition, the big mystery guy in Southern California is not of Southern California. It's Anelkis Garcia Speck, the Cuban left-hander, working out down at Pierce Junior College. Under the watchful eye of Gus Dominguez, the former agent who spirited some Cuban players out of South Florida, served some federal time for his role in spiriting Cuban players out of Cuba to Florida. I believe I missaid that earlier, but Gus Dominguez is no longer an agent, but he's a consultant to some agents, and they represent several Cuban players who are all working out down at Pierce JC there in Los Angeles, but Anelkis Garcia is the big guy. Aaron, you and I both talked to people about Anelkis. It just sounds kind of a fascinating. It seems like it's a great year for him because, first of all, you have a Cuban left-hander who's dealing in the big leagues in a big league bullpen in Aroldis Chapman. He's not Aroldis Chapman, but he is physical. And then, second of all, you have no left-handers in this draft. I mean, if Anelkis Garcia, he's the same age as most of these college pitchers who we're going to talk about in a minute. I mean, what college left-handers have stuff like Anelkis Garcia? Not many, right?
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I mean, you've got guys. I suppose you've got somebody like a Stephen Okert or even a Lex Rutledge who are kind of wild card, power armed, bullpen lefties. But this guy, he doesn't really have a changeup either. So, I mean, in that respect, I mean, he's probably comparable to like a Stephen Okert, who's got two real power pitches, or, Rutledge. I mean, both those guys, maybe they're bullpen guys. Maybe they have a chance to start, but I think Garcia is kind of in the same boat. I mean, it's a good fastball. It's, 89, 92 is, I think, where I had it. And, with a curveball, I think that flashes plus, but it's still inconsistent. I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily better than those other guys, but he's
right.
The unknown. So he's intriguing, but I mean, I don't think he's better than Andrew Haney at Oklahoma State, who maybe isn't as physical, certainly, but is can really pitch, and he has a proven track record. He's a starter. He's a guy that has a deep repertoire and competes. And I would certainly take Haney, but you could put Garcia in the conversation with some of these other guys. I mean, even, you and I think both really like Steven Rodriguez at Florida.
Right.
I mean, how do you think Garcia compares to him?
That's a great question. I think I would take Paco, but I'm a Paco Rodriguez fan, even though he does that stupid thing he does with his lead leg when he comes set. I mean, I almost think someone's going to – that'll be almost one of the first things people change about him. You know, I've said this before, but – you know what that reminds me of when he does that is Larry Johnson's free throw shooting, which I always thought.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
I also thought that was a joke. Also, the way that Larry Johnson went up and stopped and then did it. I mean, I don't know how you could have made that illegal, but I mean, basically, a balk is an attempt to deceive the runner. I mean, if you really look at it that literally. He balks every time he comes set because he's clearly even when there's no one on. Why he'd do that, I have no idea. But it seems like it gets him in rhythm and timing. I have to feel like, you know, I have to believe that his slider could be just add a little more depth. I think it'd be, you know, an average to slightly above average pitch. But with his arm strength and the cutter and the command is what sets Rodriguez apart for me from Garcia. And the big question is, can Onelkis Garcia start? And he's kind of really inconsistently thrown a changeup. I guess the other question is, should he even be in this draft? It feels like the answer to that is no, but he is anyway. And there's, you know, I happen to think most of these Cuban guys would be better off if they went into the draft. A lot of Cuban players have been kind of underachievers when they're free agents, and they get more money, and that's great. But the hype is so significant, it's hard to, you know, get past that. Whereas, you know, Escobar, he's going to get paid. And he went through the draft, and he got paid when he got drafted. It's like $500,000, whatever. He's gotten paid. He's been a big leaguer. He's been a successful big leaguer. And when he's a free agent, he's going to get big money. He's not going to get one shot at it. He's gotten multiple shots. So going through the draft worked for Yunel Escobar. And I'm surprised that other players or their agents have not just tried to follow that example. But they, you know, they seem like they fight it tooth and nail and just can't wait to be free agents. And I understand why, but I think one of the more positive examples of a Cuban player coming to the U.S. is Yunel Escobar, and he got drafted, and it worked out for him. So I don't think he should be the exception. I don't, you know, but Onelkis Garcia has been working out in Los Angeles for a lot of the last year, and when he wasn't in L.A., he played winter ball in Puerto Rico. Last I checked, both those places are places where you're covered by the draft. So I understand why he's in the draft. I think he should be draft eligible. I don't think he should be a free agent, even if he's technically a Mexican resident. So he's a very unusual case, though, Aaron. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Definitely a wild card. I mean, this is a draft that feels like it's full of wild cards. You know, there's just a – I don't know. It's one of those years where I think there are going to be some surprises, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think so. And I think, Aaron, the biggest surprise – the most unpleasant surprise is coming for some of these college juniors. And I think if you're not a priority college junior for a team, I think you're really in trouble. I think you may be waiting a lot longer than you thought you'd be waiting to get drafted. And I think the combination of the new CBA plus the weak college class will equal the most high school heavy draft class, at least in the first 10 rounds, that you or I have ever seen, or that most people in the game have ever seen. What do you think of that theory?
I think it makes sense, you know, and I'll tell you, I really think this could be a boon for college baseball. I mean, because I do think you'll see a lot of quality juniors coming back next year. We've already had a lot of quality juniors come back. Just look at this year's senior class is the strongest I can remember. You know, we could be looking at a lot more of that in the coming years. And, you know, there's guys that, you know, I was talking with a coach today who said, you know, if this player, college junior of mine, you know, is he going to really go sign for, you know, for $100,000 after the 10th round? I mean, in the past, maybe you do sign for $100,000, you sign after the 10th round, but I mean, it's, you know, I don't know that the there's so much advantage to doing that now. I mean, I guess it depends on the player and if you're in a hurry to go out there and start your pro career or not. But, you know, even if you're a fifth-round pick out of high school, let's say, I mean, what's the slot there, John? It's about $200,000? I mean, a little more than that?
Something like that, yeah. I'll look it up, but, yeah, I don't have it memorized, but we have the chart at baseballamerica.com. Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly not life-changing money, you know, and it seems like there's more advantage to a lot of these kids. If you've got let's say you've got a full ride, at a top Division I program, you know, and you go in the fifth round, you know, why would you sign? I mean, you know, that money would be gone in a couple of years in the minor leagues. You're not making a lot of money as of salary when you're in the minor leagues. I mean, I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of advantage to going to school, getting your education, and you know, get the same money 3 years later or more money. I do think we'll see a lot more good quality players go to college, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that every team that in the past has been signing players like high school players. My favorite example is Christian Benford from Pennsylvania last year, who was signed to Virginia and signed with the Royals for like $575,000. Jack Lopez, another Royals signee, was another good example. I think he was a Miami recruit, $750,000 in the 16th round. Not even a guy who was a typical high school middle infielder signee in that he's like an average runner. Not, he wasn't even like a burner, you know. Those are the kind of guys that you have to sign now. You have to draft in the first 10 rounds. Not only that, you have to push them up pretty high. And you have to be a team that has extra picks to get those kind of players. Because you're at pick 166, and you're under $250,000 at pick 167. You're under $250,000. And depending on where you are, that's a 30-some percent tax rate on that. Maybe there's state tax after that. So you're going to probably – you're looking at 40% or more of that off the top right there, plus the 4% you're paying your advisor. So your baseball take half of that is gone. So you're going to see $125,000 of that. If you're a high school player and you have some belief in your talent and you have some academic inclination of whatsoever, why would you sign for that? You know,
right.
In the past, you would have said, I need $500,000 or that's it, or I'm not going. And a lot of teams said, sure, we want the player. We're going to pay. So I feel like those kind of players are going to be taken in the first 10 rounds. Teams are going to try to spread their money out. One of the ways they'll spread their money out is taking college seniors in the first 10 rounds, the James Ramsey, the Peter O'Briens, those kind of guys. I know they're a lot better ones. Those are just two that are
Preston
in my area.
Preston Tucker,
maybe. Maybe. You sly dog, you. We've been podcasting about Preston Tucker for 4 years. I'm tired of that guy. Go play pro ball, Preston.
he's gonna go good, John. I'm telling you.
He's going to go good and sign for $100,000, $110,000. But but I think you're going to see college juniors with deals done, seniors with deals done, so that these high school players can get signed. Pro ball, I think most pro teams don't want these guys going to college baseball. But I think you're going to have a lot of juniors who have their hearts set on signing this year, and are going to have a rude awakening and wind up signing for $100,000, or their option's going to be they're going to get re-recruited. I think college coaches know this already. I think a lot of them are already ready to re-recruit their players between June and July 13th, between the draft and July 13th, the signing deadline, to re-recruit those players and get those college juniors to not sign for $100,000, $105,000 and come back to school and try to be the next James Ramsey. You know, try to be the next, I don't know, Nick Petrie. Isn't he a senior at Missouri
what
State?
What was that name?
The Missouri State kid?
Petrie?
Yeah, is he a senior?
No, he's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just know he throws 84 miles an hour and has had an amazing year. So he's a guy we probably haven't talked about in the podcast and probably should, but we'll save that for Monday's college podcast. But I don't think anyone knows what's coming, but I do think it's going to help college baseball one way or the other, or maybe both ways. I do think you'll have a few more guys go to school, and I think that's actually, for the overall health of the industry, I think it'll be a better thing if a high school pitcher who had Tommy John surgery already doesn't sign for $1.2 million like Chris Hughesby did back in 2006, or Christian Benford, $575,000, and there are other cases like that. If some of those guys go to college and don't sign, I think that's probably going to end up being better for the overall health of the industry. But
no,
I do think it's going to hurt on the two-sport guys, Aaron. That's where I really think the CBA is really going to hurt. I think it's going to help college baseball just on the seniors coming back and some more of those pitchers especially and maybe some raw athletes getting to campus. So I do think it'll be better for college baseball. But I think in the long run, once the teams and the agents and the players figure out the system – I do think it'll be better for baseball in the long run, with the possible exception of losing some of those two-sport athletes.
Right, and maybe, you know, if MLB is serious about supplementing the scholarships for college baseball, maybe more you can get more of these premium athletes to go play college baseball. That sounds like they are serious. Sounds like there's some serious discussions about MLB maybe paying to get baseball up to 14 or 15 scholarships, that would be a significant boost. You know, if you got that many more scholarships to go around, you're going to get more premium athletes to go to college, and then MLB can have their chance at them in 3 years. So even if you can't sign them out of high school, you know, there's a lot to be said for having a strong college baseball. If you're Major League Baseball, I mean, you talk about it wanting to attract these athletes, you got to start by building a good foundation. And you know, when you're losing guys who want to go to college and play college football or college basketball, I mean, if you can get those guys to play college baseball, they can still develop their skills there. I mean, players do get better in college baseball. You know, I mean, I think there's this misconception among some people in on the pro side that you got to go sign right away in high school to really develop your skills. But I mean, I think it's clear that not everybody gets better. Some people go backwards, but look at any draft. I mean, more than half of your first rounders are college guys.
My big issue there, Aaron, as I think you know, but my big issue always is the assumption that pro ball does it better than college baseball. In a lot of cases, that's true, but it's certainly not true of all. And, you know, if you I don't know of a I don't know of a Division I program that's getting good players out of high school that has lost for 19 straight years like the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't know. I just think that, that this doesn't happen. So there are a lot of, there are coaches who have been at their schools for 30-some years, like Mark Marquess. That wouldn't happen if he had the Pirates track record. So I just think it happens, and in college baseball gets put down. I just think there are a lot of college coaches that do know what they're doing, and just that there are a lot of college coaches who don't know what they're doing from a development standpoint. And there are a lot of pro teams that don't know what they're doing. You know, until they changed pitching coordinators in Cincinnati, they had like a decade-long streak of not developing any homegrown pitchers. And same thing in Milwaukee. They still, outside of Yovani Gallardo, just don't have a great track record of developing their own pitchers in Milwaukee. So, and they've had some big league success. So it's just not automatic that pro teams develop better than college. That's my... always my issue. There are colleges that abuse their pitchers. There are colleges that don't know how to develop. And I know that they all don't focus on development, but there are also pro clubs that don't know how to develop, just the bottom line. Yeah. And I would wager that most of your college coaches probably care about your, as a parent, I would guess there are more college coaches that care about their players than double-A hitting coaches care about their players. And I mean, that's just the way it is. And a lot of that comes from the top in an organization where they tell you which players to care about and which ones don't. You know, these guys are the prospects. These guys aren't. And that comes from on high. And how can you get that memo and really care about all your players the same? But that's pro ball. That is very difficult. So pro ball is not for everybody. I agree with you. I do think the new CBA is going to make it, I think, a little bit better for college. Well, it could make it a lot better for college baseball. I think it'll make it better for the professional baseball industry, though, because, frankly, you really just should want players who want to be in pro ball, not players who are in pro ball because they want the money.
Right.
You know, how many of those guys who signed because of the money are really ready to go? If you have to buy them out, if they didn't really want to go, that's what area scouting is supposed to be about, is finding out who really wants to play. You talk to area scouts all the time, and they say, oh, he wants to play, right? I mean, that's a big separator for those guys. And I think there's a good reason why it's a separator, because if you want to play, you're really going to work hard to get better at it. So.
Right. And there's, you know, and a lot of players benefit, I really believe, they benefit emotionally and just, you know, they mature in college, you know. And if you're a guy that, if you have the grades and you know, you value education at all, you know, I mean, look at, you know, anyone who's been to college, think back to your college experience and the person you were when you were 18 years old versus the person you were after school. I mean, I just think there's a lot to be said for that whole experience versus, you know, spending your time in a complex league somewhere, or, you know, even in low A. I mean, it's a much different lifestyle. And, you know, I think there's a lot of growing up that can be done in college. So, you know, I don't want to – we've gone off on a tangent here. Obviously, I'm a supporter of college baseball. I think I made that point.
That's okay. I think it was a useful tangent. And the last tangent, let's talk real quick about this proposal. You've done some reporting on it. We've both read about this with MLB, and I'm going to share an opinion with you that we got. We haven't published it. I don't know if we're going to end up publishing. We have so much other stuff on the site right now. I don't know if we have time for it, but former Missouri right-hander Garrett Brosius, former San Francisco Giants minor leaguer, has written some non-prospect diaries for us. He actually wrote an opinion piece that I think he's put on his blog today, where Garrett argues that he would be very leery of an MLB-NCAA partnership. And basically his point on it is, and if you haven't read the article that we've sent you this news, check out on the college blog. Aaron wrote a post about it about a week and a half ago, where Major League Baseball and the NCAA have negotiated about maybe MLB supplementing some scholarships at the college level, possibly funding Wood Bats, but baseball, the NCAA and college and MLB working together to make on the sport of college baseball, which I think is really big news. But basically, Garrett just says be wary of this because he doesn't trust the NCAA and he doesn't trust MLB. And then you had Mike Fox, the North Carolina coach, saying, well, usually if somebody wants to give you money, then they want some control. So I guess I'm still optimistic about that, Aaron. Even if something comes of it, I just think it's a big deal that MLB and the NCAA recognize that they have some common ground and there are ways they can work together, not antagonistically, as we were just talking about. It feels like that's got to help, even if there's nothing concrete out of this.
Right, and you know, certainly Coach Fox is right. There, you know, MLB isn't just going to give away their money. There is going to have to be some quid pro quo here. You know, as far as the terms of that, that's still yet to be worked out. But yes, I mean, you know, MLB, they have some things that they. That they, I think, would want to change. And I think a big part of that would be, you know, having more control over what happens in the summer. You know, one thing I heard was a possibility would be that, you know, these summer leagues would maybe be staffed by MLB instructors.
Interesting.
You know, you have all your, maybe you have all your best guys. MLB helps select who goes to the Cape Cod League, let's say, and you've got MLB, you know, instructors helping develop these kids in the summertime, and they get to pick who goes. I mean, it's something like that. I think that's one thing MLB kind of is interested in doing, something along those lines. So, you know, I think that the sense I got is that the things MLB wants in return for potentially supplementing the scholarships are nothing that coaches would object to. So, you know, we'll see what comes of this. There's still a long way to go, but I think there's real cause to be optimistic, and it could be a good thing. And I agree that it's fantastic that Major League Baseball and the NCAA have recognized their mutual interests.
There's two other tidbits of that I want to run by you. I wasn't sure if you'd seen this story or not, but Steve Pivovar of the World Herald in Omaha, of the World Herald here in town, as he asks questions when we're at the College World Series. I love it when he says that. Steve Pivovar, yeah. Of the World Herald here in town. I just love Piv. But Piv asked, did some a little bit on this story as well. Two of the details that he had were that, one, MLB really wants the college season to end before the draft.
Mm.
For me, I don't see how on earth you could do that. College baseball has worked so hard. Dave Kailich has worked so hard. And the college coaches lobbied so long to get you know, a little bit longer season, this 14-week season. I think right now 14 weeks, 56 games, 4 games a week works well for everybody. It's a good compromise system for college baseball. It's logical. It's consistent. And now the season basically ends, you know, the regular season's over before the draft. But they made it, he made it sound like in this story they wanted the College Series done before the draft. For me, Aaron, would you agree with me that the easiest way to do that is to move the draft?
Move the draft.
Okay.
Exactly right. I mean, that just makes sense.
I would love for the draft, at the very least, to be a week later, right before the College World Series. Otherwise, I'd like it to be at the All-Star break after the College World Series. I understand that would be a negative for the New York Penn League, Pioneer League, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, well. That's kind of how I feel about that. I think that the better brand name is the College World Series. That develops more fans, in my mind, than the Mahoning Valley Scrappers. And I don't mean to pick on the Scrappers, but I don't think the New York Penn League, it's great. The New York Penn League is great. Northwest League are great. They can still do just fine with high school players in their first full season who don't go to the Sally League or the Midwest League. They go to those leagues. So that's one.
You're gonna hear it from Scrapper fans, John. You don't have any respect for the Scrappers.
Or the Muck Dogs. The Muck Dogs are going to get after me. Second of all, Aaron, the other proposal that Piv had in there was that if there were more scholarships, that it would be a full scholarship that cannot be divided up among more than one player, and that MLB would have some say in who got that scholarship. So it really feels like that would be – I still think that if it's one scholarship, that presents less of a Title IX, but if it's one full scholarship, it really sounds like MLB is saying to college baseball, hey, we don't want you just to give this scholarship money to country club suburban kids, which is that's the perception that college baseball has, is that it's suburban country club white kids playing. And it is overwhelmingly white, college baseball is. I think the big reason why MLB wants to get involved here is the fact, not the perception, but the fact that its African-American participation rate has dropped. And you can argue whether or not that should be the motivating factor for MLB, but I think that's why they want to get involved there. Do you think I'm reading too much into that? Or especially when they're saying one full scholarship, it looks like they want to be able to compete for lower-income athletes, whether they're white, black, Hispanic, whatever, but to be able to have full scholarship opportunities so that you can compete with those full scholarship sports like football and men's basketball.
Yeah, I do think that's their overriding interest in getting involved. There's no question. So, that's an interesting notion. I hadn't heard that particular side of it, but I agree that that's the reason they want to get involved is they want to attract more good athletes and more minorities, certainly.
Well, I really do think that that's a big part of college baseball. If it's going to grow as a sport, I think it's easier for it to grow working with MLB and not antagonistically. And I also feel like it's also a possibility, Aaron, that this could just completely blow up, because the last time I covered two entities with egos as big as MLB and the NCAA, it was MLB and the Olympics, and look how that turned out. I mean,
right.
I don't know who has a bigger ego, the NCAA or the Olympics. I'd say it's probably the Olympics. But it's close. So I'll be surprised if these talks that do look very serious, if they bear any fruit. But I do think it's positive that they're at least talking. And I'll send you Garrett's column. I should have done that before. I didn't know we were going to talk about this on the podcast today. But, we don't really ever have time to talk about it with the stock reports and Top 25 meeting on Monday. So, it's a great show, great podcast. Anybody from the West Coast or the college class that I've asked everyone else on these draft podcasts, Aaron, personal cheese balls. Have you got a personal cheese ball this year? Non-top 200 personal cheese ball. Cannot be the Kirby guy, Nathan Claim Kirby. Of course you know that Connors is Taylor Ard. Jim's is the Joker from Indiana State, Dakota, whatever his name is.
Dakota Backus, yeah.
Dakota Backus. And mine, of course, is Brandon Miller at Samford. Who is Aaron Fitz,
nice.
2012 draft, personal cheese ball?
John, I'm going to go with Tyler Heineman.
Nice.
UCLA.
You love the Heineman.
I do love the Heineman brothers. Tyler Heineman is a switch-hitting catcher who's he's had a nice offensive year. I mean, this is a guy who's kind of buried behind Steve Rodriguez last 2 years and hadn't really played till his junior year. But he's had a nice year. I mean, he's actually cooled down a little bit here down the stretch. He's down to 359. But he's got more walks than strikeouts. I mean, he's a contact hitter. He does have field to hit from both sides, and he's a good receiver. Average arm. Solid catch and throw. I mean, he's handles the staff really well. I mean, he's not a high upside guy, but I can see this guy playing in the big leagues for a long time because catchers are hard to find. In case you hadn't heard that before.
I've heard that somewhere, maybe on this very podcast. And is there a JUCO joker? What's your California JUCOs look like? Is there a California SoCal JUCO guy we can all get behind?
There are a few JUCO guys that have a little bit of buzz. I mean, Corey Jones is an arm strength guy at College of the Canyons who could get drafted okay. We didn't have him in our top 200, but he could get drafted as high as the fourth round maybe. I think the consensus is lower on him. Brandon Brennan at Orange Coast, another guy that, again, I could see getting up there and maybe as high as the fifth. But for me, and for the consensus, I think is more of a 7th to 10th round kind of guy. But
I guess Stephon Sabol, kind of his draft stock appears to be down for OCC, correct?
Yeah, it is. It is down. That is true. I mean, he was hurt for a while, and he just hasn't had a great year. I mean, he kind of is what he's always been. He's an athlete that needs to polish his skills, and he probably goes in the top 10 rounds somewhere. But the guy that I'm a little bit more excited about, there's a couple of guys that I think are a little under the radar, but I like River Stevens is his name. He's a second baseman from Hancock Junior College. He's kind of a nice little under the radar guy, maybe a back of the top 10 rounds kind of guy. He's got a real good feel to hit. Not a big power guy, but he does have some strength in there. Nice defender. I mean, kind of a no real standout tools, but he can hit. That's the big thing. There's a sleeper for you, River Stevens, Hancock Junior College.
I like that, River Stevens. I also like the fact that Rio Hondo, which I believe is alma mater of Evan Longoria. He attended for 1 year before he went to Long Beach State for two. Rio Hondo enters the Final Four of the California Junior College Tournament at 38-3. How about the Roadrunners? And then Orange Coast, OCC, got old John out the belly, 36-5-1. So I think we have our two favorites in your California
Orange
Junior
Coast
College.
Orange Coast has a great team. Orange Coast has a great team with a lot of prospects this year. They're going to have a bunch of guys drafted. John Altavilla does a great job there, and that's my pick to click. That's my pick in California.
I'm taking Rio Hondo just for the hell of it.
All right, do it.
I think that's actually just our Southern California Final Four. I'm not sure who our NorCal Final Four is, but I usually pick alone these days. I think that's how you pronounce it, O-H-O-L-O-N-E. But I think they lost their head coach, Jordan Tuhig. Or Tuig, I think is how you pronounce his name, but that guy was the stud NorCal JUCO coach, rising star in your coaching ranks, Jordan Tuig. Just to keep an eye out for a name that's probably not pronounced that way. So, Aaron, always fun. You laugh at my jokes. It's one of your best tools. So I appreciate it.
Right.
And have a great weekend. And this podcast is not getting posted until Monday, but so later today you'll get a chance to hear me and Aaron as you hear this on Monday argue about the top 25, and we're going to see you next week at the ACC tournament over in Greensboro.
Yeah, very excited.
I'm also looking forward to it. For Aaron Fidd, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.